Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. Hope you are all really well. Before I get kicked off, I wanted to say just a few words about the sudden passing of recruitment influencer Ben Nadar. I've had him on the podcast a couple of times, once when he was starting his journey and trying to gamify the recruitment world in his own way. And the next time I had him on was when he was launching his training empire, recruiting empire, I think it was called. Really nice guy, really enthusiastic. And I think he helped a lot of Americans, independent recruiters get started. So all around nice guy, died at 35, heart attack from what I heard, something along that lines. Shows us all that we have to take care of ourselves and health is as important as anything. Speaking of which, I'm training like a lunatic, doing 5 PT sessions a week. I've judo now in a little bit, and then I'm getting a couple of Brazilian jiu-jitsu sessions, and no competitive training really, just doing it to tick along. Family stuff's great, loving life here in Gibraltar. Great for the kids, great for us. The sun's been shining since the start of March, and we are loving it here in the South District. So what a move that was. And if any of you are thinking of it and want to reach out and find out more about it, I'm more than happy to be the Gibraltar spokesperson, because we just love it. With the increased taxes the UK government's asking for, I can imagine a lot of you are wondering if there's a better place out there for you to host your company. And now a lot of us are either remote or hybrid, or I think if you get to a stage, you know, you have somebody run your office, it might make more sense to live in a Portugal or a Gibraltar or somewhere that's a bit more tax efficient. But I've done loads of research on it and we ended up here. I'm really happy about it. And but let's talk about today's guest. So his name's Giles Daubeny. Who is he to me? Well, when I was starting in recruitment, I started at Robert Walters about 12 years ago. I think it was 12 years ago. And I was in Western Australia. Giles was running Robert Walters with Robert Walter. And once a quarter, they would roll in Giles on the TV to give us a market update. And I remember when they were talking about launching their RPO, or they've given us the results of it, and it stuck with me. It was like, it was a mad experience living in Western Australia in a suit, wearing a suit and looking out over the river and a corporate office in a mining town, and having people from a London listed business on a pre-recorded piece being wheeled into the room. And if we felt like we were part of something bigger, and that was cool. You know, it was good. And there's thousands of employees and recruiters. So to get to interview this man years later and invite him into our RecWired community and introduce him to some of our clients that he does advisory with, it's funny how it's come full circle. But he's a very open man and very social, and doesn't, you know, isn't precious with his time or who he is. Just a good guy that is very knowledgeable, has been there from taking a private company to public, back to private, opened up global offices, built massive teams, been through different recessions, and just knows his stuff. And I always find it fascinating to get into the detail. I hope you enjoy this interview. I've broken it into two parts because he's got a long career and we have a lot to talk about. I hope you find this as interesting as I did. And if you did, please reach out to Giles and tell him, and because I know he'd appreciate it. So that is it for today. I'll probably have more content coming out over the next little while. And in part two, I think I'll tell you a little bit more about what we're up to in RecWired. Before I go, this podcast is sponsored by Luxo and Sourcewell, two tools that we use in our business. And I'm really appreciative to them for the partnership that we have. All right. Have an awesome rest of your day.
Hi, Dan Alexander here, and this episode is brought to you by Recwired, the all-in-one go-to platform for serious recruitment professionals, owners, and founders who are looking to grow their businesses. Now, we'll actually be launching the new online platform very soon, and if you'd like to be one of the first people to get access to our state-of-the-art learning platform and vault of online resources, then get in touch with us through the link in the description of this episode.
All right, welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I am joined today by Giles Dobiney, former, what was your last title at Robert Walters?
Deputy CEO, Deputy. Glorified.
Deputy CEO of Robert Walters. How many years were you there, Giles?
Oh, I was there just over 34 years.
Oh, wow. I want to take you back to the early days, and then we can kind of go into some big picture stuff. I had a quick look. You were at BNC before that.
That's right. I started my recruitment career with a small company called Accountancy Selection, and I spent about 9 months with them. They specialized in part qualified accountants. And in those days, we used to sit in an open plan office and interview at a table the candidate, and there'd be three other four people doing the same thing. Once you'd done the interview, if you could, you'd get on the phone and see if you could get them some interviews. So I did that for 9 months, and then I went and worked for Badenoch & Clark for just over 2 years, 2.5 years. I joined as a consultant in the London office. And then just after a year, I went down to open an office for them in Reading. So I spent time down in Reading.
Wow. They were quick to put you into a leadership position even back then. Talk to me about how did the chance meeting come with Robert Walters and joining them? What stage were they at?
It really was a chance meeting because I'd never heard of the company. And I got a phone call one day from somebody said, "Oh, I work for Robert Walters. This is what we are. Would you be interested in coming for an interview?" So I did go and have an interview, and I met two or three people, including Rob. But at that time, I was quite happy at Badenoch & Clark, and some of my oldest and still are greatest mates were all at Badenoch & Clark. So I decided that, you know, thanks very much for the interest, but I'd stay where I was. And then, as happens sometimes, I had a bit of a run-in with Alexander Badenoch, and my then boss said to me, said, "Giles, there's only going to be one winner in this, and it's not going to be you." So I thought, right, okay. And I picked up the phone to Rob and said, "Rob, you always said if I change my mind, give you a call." So I said, "Well, listen, here I am. Would you like to catch up?" And he said, yes. And I went and met him again when the office was in the Haymarket, probably only had about 20, 25 people. And by the end of that afternoon, he'd offered me a job, which I'd accepted. And I basically joined Robert Walters as a consultant in 1987, working in their C&I team.
Wow. What was it about Robert Walters himself that inspired you back then?
I thought he was a very inspiring, inspirational guy. He had a sort of vision as to what he wanted to do. I suppose you could argue, I've been lucky. I've worked for three sort of owner-managed businesses, as they were at the time. I worked, obviously, with a guy called Rod Leith, who ran Accountancy Selection. Then I worked, you know, with Alexander Badenoch. And Badenoch & Clark, at the time I was there, were probably bigger than Michael Page. I mean, I can remember being there on Black Monday when we had over 350 settlements clerk temps made redundant. And the business was a very successful business. And then, of course, I joined Rob. I think they were all different, but all great fun to work with and join the businesses that I did. And I was lucky I joined Robert Walters at the right time. There were only 34 people in the company, total headcount. sort of three or four teams specializing in either banking perm, commerce perm, and we did a little bit of contract. But what was unique about Robert Walters, which I've found fascinating, was that we didn't spend any money on corporate advertising. And in those days, all the business did was headhunt newly qualified chartered accountants out of what was the Big Eight and move them into investment banks or corporates. That is all we did. And people will find this amazing. I can remember not long after I'd been there, the candidate database reached 100.
Very good. And his vision then, did he know then he was going to take on Michael Page?
I think people remember Rob left Michael Page. He'd been offered the top job at Michael Page by Michael Page, but obviously wanted to do something on his own. And I think the vision always was to be international. I think if people were to criticise Robert Walters back in the day, we weren't very good at building a regional business in the UK, but we were pretty good at building an international business. And so very much the focus was to grow the business and develop an international business.
How does somebody decide which country, how and who and when to go into an international market?
I think when the business was young and started, it was very much, I guess that was Rob's vision. The first international business that was set up was in Brussels. And why Brussels? I think at the time, because there were a lot of UK and US international businesses that had their European head offices based in Belgium. And you yourself lived in Brussels, so understand that market. And so that's why we went to Brussels first. The next move was that we opened an office in Holland. Similarly, there are a lot of European headquarters based in the Netherlands, international companies and US, largely because there are some very good tax breaks for international companies and they used to run their businesses through the Netherlands.
And so, in those days, what was your hand in that?
My hand was that really began in, and it's a date I will never forget, which was August in 1990. Middle of August, I was sitting at my desk minding my own business and the phone went and it was Rob. And he said, "Oh, Charles, what are you doing this afternoon?" I said, "What do you mean?" I'm thinking, "God, my numbers are pretty good. Can't be in trouble." He said, "Oh, do you fancy going for a beer?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So off he and I trotted for a beer at the then Hampshire Hotel just off Leicester Square. And we were chatting away and he suddenly said to me, "Charles, you're a hockey player." I said, "Yes." He said, "They play hockey in Holland, don't they?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Fancy going to Holland to open and run our business in the Netherlands?" And I said, "Yeah, okay." So I started on the 1st of September 1990 in Amsterdam. Spent the first week living in a hotel. Yeah. We'd got a small office space and I literally started in Amsterdam. There was myself, one other consultant that had been hired, and a secretary.
What age were you at this stage?
I was probably in my mid-late 20s, 27, 28.
Great time to be going to a European city, eh?
It was fantastic, and I loved living in Holland. Great people, great country, and I had a fantastic 4 years, and it probably coincided with probably the worst recession that certainly I've known, and a lot of people of my age would say, which was really 91 to 93. And actually, I was out of the UK at the time. I was living in Holland. This recession really followed into Holland probably in around 94. Basically went to Holland, did exactly what we did everywhere else at that time, is we specialised in placing accountants predominantly in Holland into corporates and a few into banks. The Dutch market was very different then to any other market. It was totally retained at all levels. There is no way a client would give you a job over the phone, and they wouldn't give you a job if they hadn't met you. Mm-hmm. So the key KPI for anybody in those days in Holland was arranging client meetings. And you had to get out and meet clients. I used the fact that I was English in one way to my advantage, because all the companies I dealt with were either US or UK multinationals, or the odd Dutch international business, where obviously the business language was English. And so people would say, well, why should I give you the assignment? I said, well, I can test somebody's English better than anybody else.
And at this stage, so there's 20, 30 people in the UK. I'm sure that was growing. You've got two international offices. Was the culture set in stone of what the company was going to be like, or is this something that evolved over time? I'm really curious.
No, I think the culture had initially been set, and I think probably Rob set that, and then we just took it on. The idea and the people that were hired to work for Robert Walters had not come from a recruitment background. Most of them had come from a accounting background or had had a minimum of 2 years' work experience.
Sure.
Back in those days, you're probably too young to remember, Dalton, but if you were an accountant with the Big Eight firm, if you failed your exams, they used to sort of move you on. And it was a great hunting ground for us. So we'd take people who'd been who were Pricewaterhouse, who'd failed their exams and decided they didn't want to go and be an accountant, but they got 2 years' worth of accountancy experience. So they had some sort of credibility sitting in front of a client. And of course, they had a network. And because we only headhunted, we didn't do any corporate advertising in any form at all. The only advertising that we ever did was if we sold an advert to a client and they paid for it, which was back in those days in the FT on a Wednesday or a Thursday.
Where did you go after Holland, personally?
Personally, when I came back from Holland, I ended up running the Benelux, and we'd got Belgium, Holland, Antwerp. I then came back to London to run all the permanent business in the London office,
As well as Benelux. Or
I had Benelux reporting to me, but as is the way was the Robert Walters culture and still is. Whenever we've gone to a new country, we've tended to send somebody from within the organization, and his or her first job is normally to hire locals. And ultimately, the perfect way would be withdraw to leave a local to run the office. So when I left Holland, I promoted somebody that one of the first hires I got, and he ran the office. So I got a Dutchman running the office. We've got a Belgian running the Belgian business. And we've got somebody who is based in Antwerp, looking after Antwerp.
You tried to take on America and Asia at similar times, I think. Walk me through the decision-making process on both markets, because I think it's fair to say that the Asian one was a resounding success in terms of all the different countries and the massive headcounts.
If we go back, I guess, in time, you think of the Dunhill Fag Packet, London, Tokyo, New York. Because at the time, 65%, maybe more, 70% of our business came from financial services. And so if you think most of the big investment banks and big clients like Goldman Sachs, etc., you know, New York was head office. At the time we went to New York, the New York recruitment market was a bit of a jungle, to be honest with you. We sent two of the best recruiters I've ever worked with in my whole career to New York. And they struggled. It was purely a headhunt market. There was no advertising. And I think people forget that we are two nations who sort of speak the same language, but don't.
Yeah.
Back in those days, any decent recruiter in New York didn't want a salary. They just wanted a draw against commission. And culturally, as I'm sure you're aware, Robert Walters does not pay commission. We have a quarterly bonus scheme. So you just have to get people to buy into that. And I think the other frustrating thing with New York is that people were always getting headhunted and almost moving on. So even though we were there a long time, it took us a long time to get the office to really make money. You know, in a good year, we might make a couple of hundred thousand. In a bad year, we'd lose a couple of hundred thousand. But it was a presence on the map. Whereas Asia, I think, was a very different market. We were quite unique. The first sort of office we opened in Asia was in Hong Kong. And interestingly enough, we were the first British company to open in Hong Kong after the handover.
Really?
Yep. So we got quite a bit of press for that. Yet again, if you look at Asia and you look at Hong Kong back in those days, all the big financial institutions were based in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong really was a vibrant market. You know, it was busy. The average tenure of a job in Hong Kong back in those days was 12 months. It was big salaries, no tax, work hard, play hard. It was a great place for people to go. And there were lots of people from the UK who wanted to go to Hong Kong. So Hong Kong was the starting point. We then began to see companies were moving out of Hong Kong because it became so expensive. Singapore became a very attractive place for people to build their back offices. So we got involved with Singapore, luckily, through one of our big clients back in the day. Sad to read about them today because it was Credit Suisse. And they were looking to move their back office from Hong Kong to Singapore. And I guess it was the beginning of our outsourcing business. We seconded one of our people to Credit Suisse, and they helped them hire 40 people for their business in Singapore, which allowed us to understand the Singaporean market, to apply for a license, and all of that going on in the background. So we then opened in Singapore, and Singapore was a hugely successful and at one stage the most profitable per head office in the group.
I love analysing the different markets. And when we think of S3's journey in the international marketplace, they've arguably done better in America, but not nowhere near as good in Australia. I don't think they've done as good in Asia. Don't quote me on that. But it's almost like different business models are more aligned to the local market that they're in.
I think that's right. And I'm bound to say this, but I think Walters were the number one business in Asia by a long way. Page began to catch up and others were around, whereas probably, you know, an S3 and a Page were far more successful than us in initially in continental Europe, I mean, outside of the Benelux. I mean, back in their day, Page's business in France was huge, vast. And Germany, S3 have done very well in. So I think what we identified in Asia was, and I think this is the difference between Walters and many of our competitors, the market was very much a headhunt market. If you worked for Michael Page, you didn't headhunt. They used to run adverts all over the place. S3 back in the day, and probably still are, were more IT. Whereas we, whenever we went into a new territory, focused on finance, which was accountants. And there's always tended to be a professional qualification. So you've got access to that. And it was the pure headhunt market that probably made us more successful. I'm a great believer, you know, and there's always an element of luck. It's always about hiring good quality people and obviously keeping them. And I, you know, our mantra really from the day that I joined Walters and still to this day, I think continues is that the sort of DNA was, and Rob used to think, I want a business that's like these three companies, Goldman Sachs, McKinsey's and Arthur Andersen's. And why those three? Because he believed they were the best at what they did. They employed the best people. They charged the most and they paid the most. And that was very much our culture, certainly in the early days. We believed we hired the best people. We paid them better than anybody else. And then, of course, the most important thing is to give them career progression. And as I think earlier, I said to you, it was very rare that we would go outside of the group to hire a senior person. Mm. It was a great a great believer of promoting from within. And I was a beneficiary of that. I mean, you know, I always say the best thing that happened to me in my career was getting sent to Holland.
Yeah.
I learned a different culture. Jobs are still the same, but how do you do it? I worked with different people. And I think, you know, us Brits can be a bit insular sometimes. So suddenly it gives you an awareness of actually things are a little bit different. And I think the business has been very good at that. You know, I think I take great pride even here today. You know, Rob has eventually retired, but the new CEO of Robert Walters, Toby, joined us as a graduate. He sent me a very nice message. He turned around and said, I made his career because I sent him to Singapore 10 years ago to run our business in Singapore. Uh-huh. And he then took on responsibility for Southeast Asia and other things. He eventually came back to the UK when I stepped down and took over running half of the business. So that, I think, is an example of what the business tried to do and people within the company, and to create that DNA.